What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to an all-new episode of Tatro Radio. I've got a really cool interview for you today with marketing and brand strategy expert Adam Ivey. He's got a lot of really great experience working in the music industry, working on marketing campaigns, being a music producer and a musician himself. And he's kind of taken that on as his whole brand. It's helping other music producers realize their potential through understanding social media and marketing. It's really something that I think every producer needs to know a lot about if you're trying to get your name out there, trying to get your music heard in 2020, 2021, and beyond. So this is going to be a really great interview. Take a listen. I hope you enjoy. Please help me in welcoming our guest on the show today, Adam Ivey. Adam, welcome to the show.
Feels good to be here. I appreciate the opportunity, man.
I'm so stoked to have you on. Your stuff, I've always been interested in what you do. I live in this really weird space where I'm like a musician and a producer who releases a lot less albums and EPs and singles than I do like social media content. Like, that has been my model as an artist in general. And the stuff that you talk about all the time, the stuff that you do, is very much like focused music and the word about their brand out there. But I want to hear from you. Can you give the audience a little elevator pitch spiel about who you are and what you do?
So I'm Adam Ivey. I'm a specialist that niches in the music space, even though I do have 10 years, a little over 10 years of corporate experience in the marketing realm, right? Every job title from marketing manager, marketing director, media director, creative consultant, brand specialist, all that stuff, which I've now merged over the years into doing music, kind of helping grow my own brand. And then unexpectedly, about 5 years ago or so, I started helping other music creators build their brands, build a business around them. And it's just stuck. So I do music in the sync space. I do work with select artists. I've been doing a lot of writing in the country pop space, which is like way out in left field compared to what people kind of know me as with doing some hip hop and R&B stuff. But I love being creative. And eventually I was just like, the marketing contracts are cool. You get paid a whole lot of money to do, idea work. But at the end of the day, I want to, just fully immerse myself in the music and, not separate my focus a little too much as I was doing, and I was hitting burnout. So here we are today.
Yeah.
Built a YouTube channel, built an Instagram mailing list, all that good marketing stuff. And now we're connected today. So life is good.
Life is good. It's interesting. You talk about like idea work. I do a little bit of consulting work as well. And I wonder, how do you handle the straddling the two, like the artist side of you and what you do, the creative side? Of course, I think the marketing side is creative, of course, but also then the consulting side, the idea work. Like, how do you straddle those two? How do you keep yourself sane, and how do you do them both really well? Because you do them both so well.
Thank you. I think that I've always had creative ideas since I was a little kid. I've always been a hustler. I was that kid who would take granola bars to school and then sell them. And my parents ask, like, why are the boxes of Kudo bars gone? Like, Kudo bars are little granola bars.
Yeah.
Like, why are the boxes gone? We just bought those yesterday. I was like, well, I sold them for 50 cents a piece. And so, kind of being able to understand branding through the music creation side, as you had I had a great intro for the show. And it's so true. It's like you build the music, but unless somebody discovers the music, what's the point? Unless you just enjoy doing music, which is either I don't want to discourage anybody from that. But, the corporate side of things, I always felt very intrigued by, because I was learning at a high level, an executive level in the corporate space, seeing what these Fortune 1000, Fortune 500 companies are doing, these little veterinarians offices, dentist offices, solopreneurs, trying to build YouTube channels around photography and whatever. So getting out of the music space, seeing what they're doing at a high level, seeing all the strategies that are mixed with actual compliance, when it comes to Facebook ads, when it comes to Google ads, when it comes to the things that you regular guys like us, we don't think about, breaking rules and then getting banned. But these companies can't afford to do that because they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, if not millions, obviously on that level. But in order to avoid burnout, in order to kind of mesh the two together, I've always had a lot of control on the throttle. A lot of the marketing contracts that I've taken, kind of strategically on my end are either 3 month or 6 months. So at that point it goes by very quickly, and then I can make that decision whether or not they want to renew that contract. Or sometimes it's just a consultancy where you go in, see where the holes are in their bucket, give them a report, bunch of, you know, 27 page PDF or something, and then you satisfied the contract. That's all they wanted you for to begin with. Yeah. Just an extra set of eyes and ears. And at some point, you know, a year or two ago, I said, I'm not going to do the marketing stuff anymore for corporate world. I'm only going to help, you know, other music creators do their marketing. And I could always jump back in, but I have no real interest of doing that at this point. And I've annoyed several headhunters because of it. But, you know, the music is where my passion is. When I was doing those, I would always be dicking around on my phone, doing my own stuff, doing music based stuff. So now I get to kind of surround myself in the spaceship here and, you know, just do what I love and surround myself with other people who are at different stages in their music career, but it also keeps me hungry. It's like a perfect representation is when you go to a car show and you're a car guy. Mm-hmm. If you're around other people that are really into cars, it doesn't matter if you're into classic cars and they're into exotic cars, or you're into Jeeps and they're into Corvettes or something. Like, just being around the atmosphere is inspiring. I'm very competitive. So I'm like, man, I need it to be faster. I need it to be better. I want it to look nicer. Like, you know, maybe it needs to be cleaner next time.
And maybe you're the same as me, but sometimes I see artists, like I think about myself and I think about like how I'm constantly trying to build my audience. Sometimes I see artists that are like, they're so good and they like barely have an audience. And that burning frustration in me just makes me want to reach my hand out and say like, please just start a YouTube channel. Please put hashtags in this post so more people find it. Like things like that. Like, I'm wondering if you're the same, like if you have that burning like sensation when you see a great artist and you're like, why isn't anybody paying attention? Help people find you.
100%. It happens all the time. My team and I, we go through emails and DMs, and I scour Instagram more than any other platform aside from YouTube. Like you said, I mean, even when we connected, I mean, obviously you know what you're doing and you have a great audience and you have a lot of engagement and beautiful content, but I was like, this guy, Tatro, this guy, and I was like really good friends with a guy named Brian Tatro, who spelt his name the same way you do. And so growing up, I was like, or not growing up, but that reminded me of my friend. And I'm like, Tatro, that's a great freaking brand name. Everything is starting this, you know, you have everything locked in. So when you see somebody in the space that has a great aesthetic, you're like, this person clearly knows how to work a camera.
Right.
And they have all this stuff built up and they're getting 12 likes. It's hard to reach out because they, you know, people don't want to be sold. I mean, even though I have a program and I teach it on YouTube, a lot of times people are very cynical and they're like, oh, okay, what do you want? Are you a promo company? I'm like, no, just like watch this video. Yeah. It's going to help you. Well, you know, who are you? I'm like, well, just watch the free video. It's a free, yes. I promise I'm not asking for anything.
That's
I'm trying
the
to
nuance.
Help.
Yeah. That's the nuance part, because I think we're similar in that we have a lot of content that is really meant to help a lot of people. Like I have a lot of really beginner faced content. And it's so hard to, you put as much information out there, you don't really want to seem like you're selling it to people, but you really want to help people and you want to get it in front of as many eyes as possible. And that's very similar to a lot of the struggles that I think artists are facing too. They want to share this creation with people. Like they know, they can see from a person's page that maybe they like this certain kind of music and that they'll probably like, oh, maybe they'll like my music too. Like, but you don't want to be salesy. Are you finding that that relationship with like being salesy carries through all the way down to the artist level?
No, because I teach music marketing on an advanced level in my programs and on a beginner to early on intermediate level on my YouTube channel. A lot of people don't know the differentiating, you know, differences, I should say. But the fact of the matter is when you understand marketing on like a middle to high level, you understand the marketing psychology. So it's now the famous marketing word persuasion, right? It's manipulation. That's what it is. So you're trying to manipulate or persuade somebody with integrity and character. And I think there's a negative connotation with manipulation or persuasiveness, but if you do it the right way, it's suggestive, it's passive. They can make their own decisions, but you're guiding them. And that's what marketing is. You're guiding them somewhere. That's what a call to action is. You're guiding them somewhere. And ultimately, once you start pushing a little bit too much and there's resistance, that's when it's salesy. And that's when it comes off disingenuous. It doesn't come off authentic. It just comes off like you're trying to add them to the number, you know, and nobody wants to feel like a number.
Totally. And maybe let's dive right into it, because I know there's a lot of beginner music producers out there, even like intermediate folks who have maybe taken some 343 Labs courses. And I see a couple folks in the chat. Jeffrey Carter says, "Hey Adam, big fan of your content." Shout out to Jeffrey out there.
Shout out to Jeffrey.
And Brandon says, "Hey Nick, what's up, Adam? What up? What up? What up? Nice. Thank you for joining." But yeah, there's a lot of people in this chat that I know probably make dope music and want to get their name out there. What are some pitfalls? I think this is a fun place to start. Pitfalls you see up and coming beginner artists who kind of have their stuff together when it comes to like music and stuff, but now they want to start building a name, they want to start building a brand. What are the common pitfalls these artists are falling into?
I think a few of them, right off the top of my head, two would be lack of communication skills digitally. And then another one would be they think that the music is the most important thing to building a brand. They think that it would be like if Nike would focus all their time and effort just on the rubber of their shoes and say, if the rubber's not perfect, we don't have a brand, when they're making shin guards and helmets and jerseys and coats and socks and like. And that's what people kind of fall into that trap. And I've done it. You've probably done it. So it's like you just focus on this on music and you think that it needs to be perfect, but perfection is subjective, completely subjective. And especially in the music realm, right? Because it's all by taste. So you look at what you're doing and then you realize nobody's listening. So why do I care? Like this can be perfect all I want, but if you polish a car and it's a beautiful one of a kind car in the middle of a barn in Ohio where
Sits in the
nobody ever sees
garage.
it, right? Then what does it matter? Like for your enjoyment, cool. Again, a lot of people make music and they don't want to do it for a career, but those aren't my people. The people that are my people are, I want my voice heard. I want to build an adoring fan base. I want to get paid with my music. I want opportunities to come from this. And I want to connect with other people that get it. And I don't have to try to convince my family that what I'm doing is going to work. I just want to work with other people that understand my passion. So, getting out there and getting a name out, your music is the product and you are the brand. I say that all the time, but it's true because the brand is what you're left with when you don't have any new music to release, or you got sick, or somebody came and stole all of your stuff, and it's going to take a few months to get back on track. But your brand is going to be able to let you leverage that attention and keep people along with that journey and that experience. So, I said a little earlier that I think that the lack of communication skills digitally is a huge pitfall because a lot of people will go out and they'll use hashtags and they'll post beautiful content. Their captions might even be okay, but they don't know how to communicate with people. Either they have an ego and so they think, well, I'm not talking to these peasants. I mean, I might be a little exaggerative there, but there are people that think that way.
For sure.
Or they go and here's an example. So if you and I were to go to the mall on Black Friday when it's not a pandemic, and we're trying to play tag with as many people as we can, the way that our previous generations grew up is you would just go and you would play tag with every single person. You'd hit them on the shoulder, tag, you're it, tag, you're it, tag, you're it, till somebody would agree to play with you. We can't do that now because you're evading another person's space. That's very abrasive. Security, in a very hypothetical manner, would be called on you, but that's the same thing that people are doing when they're DMing strangers saying, yo, my release came out yesterday, check it out, share it,
Check it out. Or the like false thing
subscribe,
where it's like,
follow.
really, can you just give me your honest opinion? I think that is the lowest thing. Like, you're trying to say you want my opinion, but you don't actually want my opinion. You just want me to listen to your music, you know? I think that's so funny.
Hey, bro, I love what you're doing. If you could just check this out, it would mean a lot to me. I'm trying to, and they don't follow you or anything. They have like 16 followers
It
and
was
two
copy and
pieces of content.
pasted. Yeah, exactly. So I think the reason for that, I have so much compassion and empathy for those folks, because I understand the like you feel like you're swimming in the ocean, right? It's this vast ocean. You don't know what to do. You're just trying to stay afloat. So you DM people and you're like, okay, what's the easiest thing to do? I can just ask people to listen to the music. But what people don't realize is the scale of that and how many people are actually trying to do that and how you haven't built up the relationship with the community. So erase that tactic. What should these beginner artists be doing? Like, what is the work they should be putting in?
So I think that in this day and age, in order to be heard, you need to be seen on some level because the visibility really, really makes a huge difference. So in order to be able to draw people in, what I call magnetic music marketing, I talk about it all the time on my YouTube channel. It's when you're putting out strategic pieces of content in strategic places to where people are running into them and they can't get around them eventually. And they know who you are, whether they decide to follow you or not, they're going to understand, oh, that's Adam Ivey. Oh, that's Tatro. Oh, like, I've seen this person everywhere. My friends are sharing their stuff now. Oh God, like the ad that just popped up is for them. So what we need to do is we need to understand that one person is not just one individual. That one person can be five or six different followers on different platforms. So you could discover me on a podcast and be like, oh, I like this personality or what he was saying or his music or whatever. At the end, hey, where can people find you? Oh, go on Instagram. You can find me here. Oh, I'm going to follow him on Instagram now. If my content's any good, I'm going to keep you there. I'm going to retain you. And then from there, oh, he does YouTube videos. I didn't even know. I'm going to go to his YouTube channel. Okay, subscribe there. Oh, I can get this free guide that is going to help me do XYZ by signing up to his email list. Now I get a podcast listener, Instagram, Twitter, maybe YouTube. And so I'm not depending on one algorithm to help me grow. I have all these different elements.
Yes. And at some level, if those people have opted in, you have some people that are going to stay on one platform no matter what. Like some folks might only consume my content on YouTube. Some folks might only consume my content on Instagram and they might never cross over. But if you give people all these opportunities to cross over, podcast, YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, whatever it may be, if they become one of those people that follows you on all of those and they intersect at all those places, those are your fans. Like there's your community right there. And if you have a way to kind of capture those people, they bought in and they're following you on every platform, meaning they're not just attracted to the medium that you're or the stuff you're putting out on a specific medium. They're attracted to you and what you do. And I think that that's really powerful. But the whole thing is, I think people don't understand. I think it's really comes down to building community. Like it's not so much as just finding like passive listeners. It's finding people to engage with. And like you said, building those communication skills, like actually being able to communicate with these people like they're a community, not like they're the peasants or the fans. And that is challenging for people. And I think it's because it's a lot harder than sending somebody a DM saying, hey, will you check out my latest track? It takes more time.
It takes energy. Yeah. And so a lot of people are so focused on what they're doing. What are my goals for the day? How am I going to grow? How do I finish the song? How do that they don't intentionally do it possibly, but they don't care about other people.
And so the they're mental capacity at the end of the day is just you're spent. You're making the art, but now there's a whole nother half of what you've got to do.
Yeah. And like you said, you need to be empathetic to say, how can I provide value in some way, shape, or form? And I know that value is like the most played out word in the marketing and online community for the last 10 years. But if you lead with value, if you give them an experience, if you give them some education, motivation, inspiration, you just have eye candy as far as like studio photos or, you know, what you do with your lighting and everything being sharp and crispy, that's half of their experience there. So when you can release that dopamine in their brain, then they become dependent on your content. It's called what I call the value follow formula. You give them some gateway content that gets them interested. They come into your ecosystem and then you give them a retention path to stay with you. And then they eventually become dependent, which again, dependent has a negative connotation. But if you have a parent, a loved one, a significant other who you can go to when you want to cry and the rest of the world can't see you, that person is somebody you depend on. And that's in the best, most pure way possible. So when they come to your content, they're having a bad day and your content makes them smile, makes them forget about that boss that was over their shoulder, makes them, you know, inspired to create their own music, inspired to use their cell phone for the first time to shoot a beat making video because you're doing things that they aspire to be or do themselves. That's how you keep somebody around and convert them from just a number of follower over to the fan. And get them to buy in because, like I said, once they're interested in you, just like a door-to-door salesman, if you got that like, no trust behind you, you're powerful because the power of influence is so important, but it needs to be used, like, again, with integrity and keeping your character in check because, you know, the people that are out there shucking everything they can to make a buck, I mean, you could see right through their whole spiel, like, pretty quick. So build a community. Care about their likes, care about how you can provide them with what they need. Because I know I was guilty of it years ago, trying to create content that I thought was going to go viral, or I thought that, you know, would be fun for me, but it wasn't what my audience wanted. I now create content for what they need, what they want, what they ask for, you know? So
totally. I want to jump into the chat because, yeah, the chat is jumping all over. I think we have a lot of questions today for sure from different artists. And we started touching on this question, but Skate Alex too, jumping in right away and saying, what can we do besides focusing on streaming revenue as artists? And I just want to kick this off and say, I'm releasing beats every single day this month, 31 days of October, doing Beattober, and they're little minute-long beats. I'm getting thousands and thousands of plays this month. Not going to get a single drop of revenue from those beats, right? Not going to, those aren't going on Spotify. Like Spotify, in terms of like my income at the end of the year, 0.00000, like 1% of income. You know, it's really like buying a lottery ticket with streaming revenue, I think, because you want to get playlisted, et cetera. So what's your response to that question is what should we do besides focusing on streaming as revenue for artists? For me, streaming is so far at the bottom of the totem pole for me.
Yeah, you know, I look at streaming like I do YouTube views. Like, even though I make, you know, a percentage of a penny per view, and it fluctuates. I mean, you know the YouTube game, but it's similar, right? So it's like you're trying to ramp up with the quality. You're trying to bring in advertisers that are going to help get that CPM up, make a little bit more money from YouTube. But you can't depend on YouTube for a sustainable, like, consistent paycheck unless you're, you know, millions of subscribers. So same goes for Spotify. Spotify living off of streams is like a relatively new thing in the industry anyway. So when people are so discouraged because they're making 0.00327 cents per stream and they're only getting 40,000 streams a year, of course that's not a – I mean, that's – you'd make more money panhandling, quite honestly. Sure. So what you have to do as a music creator is you are a content creator. You are a media company. So can you sell merch based off the attention that you have? Can you sell writing services? Maybe you're a singer-songwriter that would be super dope on hooks. Go link up with another 20 producers and do hooks for them. Are you somebody that could do demos for a producer that has the music but doesn't have a voice? Are you somebody that could go do Twitch streams and actually make money there, build a Patreon, you know, through a YouTube channel or whatnot, and then have people kind of donate towards the cause? Can you do limited edition merch drops that you say, hey, every month I drop 10 of these. That's all that's ever going to be in existence, whether it be a t-shirt, a keychain, a coaster, a koozie, and make it an experience, something that people are going to look back on and say, like, I've been getting the Tatro gear on the annual drop ever since day one. And like, look at how the quality's, you know what I mean? Like something they could talk about and really kind of take pride in. So the community around what you're doing, obviously you can go busking. You can, I mean, depending on where you live, maybe you can't, but, you know, doing shows and stuff, that's kind of on hold right now, but there's a lot of different things you can go. You can go, if you have a decent sized brand, you could partner with brands to get endorsement deals, sponsorship deals. You can go look for affiliate income with companies like DistroKid and various other software companies and do reviews on YouTube on how the software works. And you have a link and all of a sudden you're making a little bit of income there. I have an affiliate link with Audible. I have not talked about Audible one time in like probably going on a year, and I've received no less than $150 a month for since the last time I talked about them, just because I have it in all my YouTube video descriptions and old videos where I did mention it. It's still getting clicks, so I probably made $4,000 or $5,000 off Audible, and I only talk about books like once in a great while on my YouTube channel. It's there's awesome. Possibilities.
I try to help people understand that whole, because that was a big approach for me, especially like directly after leaving music school, like fully understanding like what were all my options for like revenue generation. Because I always thought of it as like, hey, I'm a musician. I'm an unknown musician at that. Like, I can't just put all my eggs in one basket. I can't just have one job if I'm really trying to make it. So like, how do I I outlined all the things that I thought I could do, like licensing and getting placements or teaching and then performance. And you're like trying to build up a schedule and kind of watch and see what's working and what's growing the most. But I think the one thing that folks that are frustrated with like streaming and revenue and stuff cannot do is sit around and mope that it's so messed up and that, oh, we should be getting paid more and X, XYZ. For now, like, we're in the game. Like, we're not controlling the game. We're trying to win the game. So we can't sit around and complain that this isn't the game we wanted to play. Like, that's not our place, right? If analogy I use all the time is, like, if I opened up a hot dog stand next to two other hot dog stands, and the other two hot dog stands decided that they were going to give away free hot dogs, and I wanted to sit there and say, no, my hot dogs are worth something. I'm selling my hot dogs for $2.50. Nobody's going to come to my hot dog stand unless it's an amazing experience. And how are those other hot dog stands surviving? They're selling other stuff. They're selling French fries. They're selling the condiments. Yeah. They're selling the whatever. So you really got to see, like, we're in the business of selling hot dogs, and everybody else is pretty much giving hot dogs away for free. So you got to figure out what else you can sell.
Hot dogs everywhere. That should be some new merch. Tatro merch.
Hashtag hot dogs everywhere. Next Control Freak Club drop for sure. It's so real. Like, I think it's so interesting. That's such an old school business model. It's like, I'm going to release music and I'm going to get paid from the music. It's just not that way anymore. Not for the majority of us, I would say.
Well, I put it this way. How much do you make off of, you know, Instagram likes or comments? It's the same thing. You're releasing content. You're getting traffic to it. Nobody's complaining. I'm trying to keep this censored. Nobody's complaining about, well, I had 3,200 likes on that post and I didn't get paid. Yet you're complaining about not getting paid for 3,200 streams.
Exactly.
Like, do you not see how it's the exact same thing? The issue is we romanticize the music, and I get it. If you are a purist, I am like the enemy of purists, because they're like, this is heart and soul. You're trying to make it a business. You're trying to make it robotic. There's a lot of people, look, like a million people out there, billions probably, that have lawnmowers in their garage. And then there's a select few that make six figures or more on a lawn mowing business. Go ahead and have a lawnmower in your garage. Like, be very, very, very proud of your yard. Be very proud of your edging prowess. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking about the people that have a lawnmower, bought a trailer, have a truck, have some weed whackers, and want to make money and provide for their family. I would never degrade someone who is just a purist in the form of using it as therapy, using it as a way to get their voice out onto, you know, wax, you know, hypothetically. But that's not the business side. If that's the romanticized version of it, right? That's like thinking that a marriage is going to be easy and it's going to be beautiful until the day you die, and there's never going to be any qualms or any, like, that's not how it works. It's work.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So you got to be smart, and you got to jump the trends before everybody else saturates it. And so going out and having, like you said, if you are a guitar player, if you are a tuba player, if you play the accordion, you can make things with this. You know, you can license samples, you can go and make, you know, sample packs, you can go and do lessons. Like you said, you can be the guy who everybody in your area knows as the session player, that if you need this guy, he is easy to work with. He shows up on time. He doesn't rake you across the coals with, when it comes to pricing, and he does a great job. He's a professional, you know, so you have to build that reputation of yourself, of being easy to work with. And once your customers, once your fans become evangelists for what you do, all of a sudden your brand kind of exceeds, you know, anything that you could kind of do on your own, because then that reputation builds and you become bigger than what you've built.
Yeah. And I try to, like, describe it to people. Like, if you just love the thing, like if the thing that is currently your hobby, if you really love that, like, imagine if you could get paid for doing the thing that you love that started as just a hobby and maybe becomes a career. Like that is possible, and the ways to do it are possible. Like, thinking of myself, like, I really don't like getting gear together, schlepping it to a club and playing live. Like, that is just an arduous process for me that I do not enjoy. I do love making videos, and to some extent, like, that's how I've been able to survive as a musician. So, like, you can carve your own path. I think a lot of people need help seeing that you can carve a different path. I want to jump into the chat because we have more questions.
Do it.
But who is this? Kimchi, Gil Kimchi, or Gilly Kimchi says, oh, very nice compliment. Thank you. Tatra's content, so valuable. Thank you. That was not the question I was looking for.
You're just patting yourself on the back now.
Yeah. They asked, before that, they asked, how much is too much in terms of content?
Are we talking
about stuff you're putting out there?
Are we talking about buying a car or something? Like,
hot dogs. We're talking hot dogs.
That's what this whole entire episode's all about. No, I don't think too much is still not enough. I know that sounds kind of ridiculous, but yeah. If your audience cares about what you're doing, one thing I get from my students all the time is, well, Adam, you're saying to post this much, but like, I don't want to annoy my audience. I'm like, when's the last time that Drake or Ed Sheeran or Brad Pitt or whoever you're really into, when's the last time that they posted three times in your day and you're like, I'm not following Drake anymore. He's annoying with all this content.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen because you're a fan. You want to see behind the scenes. You want to see what they're up to. So a real fan base, people get it confused all the time. If they're fans, if they appreciate what you're doing, if they want to be part of your experience, they're not going to get annoyed with two or three pieces of content a day unless it's overly repetitive, unless it's salesy, unless it is one-way content where you're pushing it out and you're not embracing anybody's comments, you're not embracing anybody's DMs, you're not embracing other content in the community. And acknowledging people goes a very, very long way. So when it comes to too much, I wouldn't worry about too much. I would worry about having enough. You'll know when it's too much. You'll either get bored or burnt out. You need to avoid those two things, boredom and burnout. Avoid them with at all costs, you know, with great intent. But yeah, I think that coming up with creative content and always pushing yourself to go beyond what you're comfortable with, as far as, let's face it, I have a ton of content in this room. Just how you're seeing me right now is how I shoot a lot of my YouTube videos. And I get sick of it. I'm like, people are tired of seeing me going,
yeah,
like in the thumbnails, right?
Love so, those thumbnails.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm always trying to think outside the box. It's so this room, I have like three or four different YouTube sets. You can't see them now, but if I turn the camera 180 or 90 degrees, even, I have a podcast table. I have a little interview section. I have a TV. I have green screen. And so you need to keep it not only consistent, but you need to keep it exciting for yourself to where you're not feeling like you're not doing anything. You know, I say all the time, even professional butterfly catchers, it's a job for them. Sometimes they don't want to get out of bed. So keep in mind that this is a business. You have to embrace it. People are miserable taking phone calls for telemarketing companies, yet they think that marketing and they think that all the music stuff is supposed to be fun every day. It's not fun all the time, but crawling through the mud gets you to where you could stand up and say like, wow, like a lot has developed since I started doing this and now I could stand on my own two feet.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the interview really quick. I hope you're enjoying it, but if you haven't yet, check out my new lifestyle and apparel brand, Control Freak Club, at controlfreakclub.com. I put a lot of effort into it. I just dropped three designs that I think any home studio music producer, controllerist, control freak like me will really dig. I'm planning to add more designs really soon in the future too, with some sales coming up for the holidays, etc., etc. So check out controlfreakclub.com. Check out the swag, hoodies, t-shirts, stickers, masks, anything you can think of, we got it up there. And if there's other things you think I should add to the shop, feel free to let me know on Twitter or something at Nick Tatro. And I'm definitely looking for your input. So check out the website, controlfreakclub.com. Even if you don't order something, let me know what you think at least. All right, let's get back into the interview with Adam Ivey. Yeah, and I think about that concept you just talked about a lot, and I try to communicate it as much as possible, because so much of the content you see out there from artists is them either crushing it in a performance or them having a great time or them like being at the top of their game, right? So I try to share as much as of the other side as possible, the like work side, because I don't want folks, and of course, like when I was younger, I would get caught up in this narrative that, yeah, music's this thing I love and I want to do it all the time. And it's like amazing. I eat, sleep, live and breathe music. And sometimes like when I got to make a video, I'm like, all right, I got to make a video. It doesn't mean at the end of the day, I'm not like proud of the work that I've done. I'm not like happy that I get to do it. But sometimes like if you want to make that switch from music is just a passion, music is just an outlet, whatever, you want to make that switch to now I want to generate something. This becomes my work. I'm an artist. This is my work. you got to be mindful of that and really allow yourself to not get too down when you think like, oh, writing this today or making this beat today was really, you know, it felt like a burden a little bit, but that's okay. It's work. It is your work. Yeah. This is the work of being an artist. It's not, when I go play Call of Duty, I don't feel like it's work. I feel like I'm having fun with my friends because it's my hobby. It's for fun. Yeah. If you want music to mean a little bit more, you got to embrace the mindset of like, it's work.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time. I have, like I mentioned earlier, you know, I have two employees that are like, you know, dear friends of mine too, but you know, they come over every day. We work out of my house. And, you know, sometimes when we're having a very frustrated day, whether it's trying to figure out a YouTube title, whether it's, you know, I got a whole lot of rejection emails back about sync opportunities, whether I thought something was coming through, I was waiting to get paid and then that check never shows up. Mm-hmm. I have to kind of just stay humbled and say, like, I do like music and YouTube videos and marketing stuff from my house for a living while I get to pet my dogs and go downstairs and t-shirt and shorts and
perspective,
you know, right. It's like, no matter how much money you make, if the fulfillment and the purpose isn't there, it's always going to feel like you have that resistance to actually enjoying it. Right. So you need to find happiness. You need to find fulfillment and purpose in what you're doing. And then understand that, hey, I'm doing something or going after something that the vast majority of people in the world will never make $1 on. I need to embrace that and understand that I'm carving a path that nobody in my family has before, most likely. And I'm really stepping outside of the box and creating the opportunities, not trying to follow some blueprint that maybe a mechanical engineering student might have getting out of, you know, 4-year college and going to go work for a aerospace firm. You know, like that's a set path. As a music creator, we don't have a set path. There's no set. It's constantly moving.
Yes. And getting caught in that comparison game is, I mean, we could go on all day talking about that, like, especially when you're trying to be an artist, like you cannot look at, you know, your more, I guess, quote unquote, traditional, like family members or peers or folks that you look up to or look to as your peers. And you cannot compare what you're doing to what they're doing because it is just, on some level you can, but tactically it looks so different. And I've got a question from Ellie in the chat. If we want to get into tactics, specifically, we're talking a lot about mindset. Let's go into hardcore tactical stuff. Ellie says, it's so difficult to get traffic to your channel. What ways worked for you? I think a lot of people fear that as well. Oh, I'm going to start something and nobody's even going to see it.
So when it comes to, I'm assuming Ellie's talking about YouTube channel.
I think so. It seems like YouTube channel.
Okay. Okay, so one thing I want everybody to understand that's watching this is I've been on YouTube since 2009. My current channel has been up since 2010, and that's only because I wanted to change the URL. And back in the day, YouTube didn't let you, so you'd have to start a new channel to have a different username. So 2010 till now, I have 210 or 211,000 subscribers. But for the first like 8 years of that, it was at 35,000 subscribers. When I switched over to doing music marketing, music business, content, it wasn't because I was chasing trends. It wasn't because I was chasing virality. It was because I needed to find an intersection of what I was passionate about and what I would enjoy making content long-term with. So I said, I'm into marketing, obviously. I'm into music, obviously. I can do that till I'm blue in the face, till I'm old. I'm an old man, right? Completely white hair. And so I said, I'm going to be consistent with this. I'm not going to chase what I think is going to do well. I'm just going to make videos that I find fulfillment in. And that's when the channel started going crazy. But I lost 15,000 or it was like 11,000 subscribers because when I changed content types from beat making videos and parody videos and reaction videos and vlogs and stuff, like content I didn't really enjoy doing, into what I did enjoy doing, people didn't understand it. They didn't want it. But I needed to feed the people who I did want to be with me in that momentum and that movement. So the consistency has been a game changer, right? So since 2016, I've been doing music marketing and business videos. There's been a few gaps where I take a few weeks off here and there. But overall, I said, I'm going to be consistent with this, doing a video every single week. Eventually, it led to two a week. Now it's back to like one a week, two. Actually, the last few weeks have been three a week. So what I'm doing is I'm staying consistent because that feeds the algorithm. Nobody's going to invest in a new series on Netflix if there's one episode and you don't know if there's going to be any more. Because if they leave you on the edge of your seat, you can't trust it. You don't want to, you don't want, it's very frustrating. So a lot of times when I go and find people on YouTube that are amazing vocalists, they have like awesome covers. I just discover them out of nowhere. And then I go see, I'm like, oh, this video is from 4 months ago and they haven't posted anything since. I'm not going to subscribe to them, period.
Of course.
Because I can't rely on them. But a lot of times as artists, we want to do only originals. We have low-hanging fruit that will bring traffic, but we're above it. I don't want to be known as a cover artist. Yet they're doing gigs at bars for requests on Friday and Saturday nights. You know, oh, I don't want to be a cover artist. Yet they're doing it at weddings once a month. So what you need to be known as is the performer, as the person, like we keep saying, bringing that experience. Sure, it might be a cover, but how are you making it yours? Right. Yeah. I think there's a guy named Jay Diggs. I think that's his name, who just did a WAP cover, the Cardi B, Megan Thee Stallion WAP cover. And he did it in like 80s funk. And it went viral.
It's like genius. Right? Of course.
It is genius. But as an artist, if you are a pop artist, well, how can you make a country song, like a true country song, pop? How can you make a hip hop song just poppy, top 40? If you are a soul singer, neo soul, how can you take a Creed song and turn it neo? So, I mean, Creed is like completely irrelevant at this point for the most part.
I think that's a genius idea. Take those cringy like late 90s, early 2000s like alt rock and turn them into like modern day like pop electronic songs. I think the thing that you're getting at is
there's
like
creativity.
Yeah, there's creativity and not being above it. And like something can just be fun and drive traffic to your channel. But like I'm certain the artist who released the WAP cover, I'm certain he does not want to be – he does not want the definition of him as an artist to be the guy who did the WAP cover. And I don't think it will be that. But I think the millions of people that are going to flock to his pages and see his other content because he did that cover is going to be crazy. And he's going to gain a lot of followers that are going to start to define him the way he wants to be defined, not by the one piece of content that drove the traffic.
And that's, I agree 100%. I mean, think about it this way. If you do covers, if you do creative covers, especially, then people are coming to you for the creativity and it's only helping them that they know the music already. It's not because they're just coming for that. They just want to cover and then they're off on their day. They want to see what you did with it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like they're coming to you for your originality, even though it's not an original song. You're creating an original experience around that. But like you said, just because you're doing covers doesn't mean you have to be a cover artist unless that's all you do. You mix in your own originals. Like I was just talking to one of my students and I had a suggestion where he do three covers or two covers as a mashup and then work his original single into it because it was the same key. It was the same tempo, very similar to same tempo of a couple other songs. And so it would be a natural transition. And then people that already know those other two or three songs would say, oh, what's that fourth song? What's that third song? I don't recognize that. That's dope. And then, that's my new single. It's coming out on Friday. Yeah.
Yep.
So,
boom.
You know, and so think about it this way. If you're doing covers and you end up with an audience of 30,000, just 30,000, not like a huge channel, but a channel that has a little bit of ground made up. When you do the covers, imagine 10% of those people love your original stuff. How long would it take you to build up a channel of 3,000 people just with your original stuff only, and the time in between releases, you know, the technical difficulties that you might come up with, or if you batch a bunch of content, shoot five videos one day, release them every single week for 5 weeks, do that once or twice a month. Now you have a library. You have all these covers. You're doing covers that are fresh to the market, fresh to the charts, but don't have a real music video yet because, you know, sometimes that takes time. And then all of a sudden when the music video blows up, oh, you released your cover 3 months ago and now you get pulled into the YouTube algorithm as being suggested. So now you 30,000 end up with 3,000 people that genuinely like your original stuff. That leads to 5,000. And as that one number grows, the people that are genuinely interested in your completely original stuff continues to grow. You know, a lot of people look at 5,000 as like a low number because everybody else is going viral and this person had a viral TikTok or whatever. It's like 5,000 people will make you a lot of money if you're headlining someplace, right? Like you can do just fine with a few thousand people and have a sustainable income. So I think that we get wrapped up in the vanity numbers and we have to make music and make that momentum swing based on what feels right. But we can't be too proud to go about it and get the attention the way we need to get it without, you know, selling our soul to do it.
Yeah, and I think beginners with really no brand quite built up yet have to look at their own like consuming behavior. How often do you click on an artist's music video? You've never heard of the artists, you've never heard of the song. How often are you going to click on that video? It's probably very rare that you would click on artists you don't know and song you don't know. You flip that, split the baby here, an artist you don't know, a song you do know. Presented in a creative way, then you start to get some interest from folks. You got to meet them with something familiar. And another area that I've found success in that too, because I don't do a lot of covers. So for the folks out there that are not even interested in that angle of things, but like with gear and stuff, right? Like I found my kind of niche, like talking to people about how they could best use their gear. So like when I want to make a beat or I want to do a performance or something, if I instead of giving that performance like a esoteric title and that put my artist name in the title or whatever, I can say like making a beat with the Launch Key Mini or making an atmospheric ambient beat with the Launch Key Mini. Now suddenly people who were interested in the gear show up, end up listening to my music, discovering me as an artist, and they're in. If I had given it that esoteric title, which is like kind of how I tried to start the channel, like, oh, I'm an artist. Here's my performance piece. Check it out. Very few people are going to click on that. It's very hard to get discovered that way. So you got to meet people with something they're familiar with or something they're searching for, a song they like, a piece of gear they like, a thing they need to learn. I think that has totally worked for me. We just answered Ellie's question in a very long form way, but I think it was thorough. That was
We do it the best, man. We do it the
good.
best. Long-winded is our Instagram bio. I'm just kidding. No, I
Absolutely.
think that with what you're saying, my marketing brain is always like at 100 typically, and I'm thinking to myself, if you're extroverted, if you're adventurous, if you think outside the box, you're going to be able to stand out, like making a beat in the back of a pickup truck. You know, you have somebody drive down a country road and you're in the back sitting on a piano stool, like pretending to make a beat like everybody on
And
Instagram
then
does.
suddenly, yes, and then suddenly you have four, that video goes viral and you have Ford reaching out to you because they want to put you in a commercial and now you're getting a paycheck. You're not getting a paycheck from streaming revenue. You're not getting paid for that track. You're getting paid because you had a cool concept and they want you to do that thing. Like I see that play out so many times.
There's so many opportunities out there, but people are trying to look for a blueprint that already exists and they don't try to reinvent it at all. They're like, what is the list? Like they're building IKEA furniture. What is the list? What do I do next? What do I say next? Who do I talk to? Where do I go? How do I get a label to sign me? How do I go viral? How to like build the attention? And I'm not trying to talk down to anybody. I know that I can come off condescending because I've been doing this a very long time. So if you're watching this, I genuinely want to help you. But I want you to be funky. I want you to think outside the box. I want you to have fun. I mean, imagine if you were making a beat while sitting in your pantry eating snacks. And every time you come up with a different sound, whether it's the drum, the kick, the snare, the hi-hat, the pad, the overall, the melody, whatever you're doing, you have a different snack or you have a friend like feed you. There's a comedic value to that. And it's like you don't know what's going on. It spikes that dopamine in people's brain, and it's what we call a pattern interrupt. We're so used to seeing things black and white. We're used to seeing things a very certain way. When we see things outside of that norm, it gets our attention very, very quickly. That's why if you look at YouTube thumbnails, if you go on the trending page, a crazy amount of the videos that go viral or have an incredible amount of views are, weirdly enough, people on the thumbnail with their mouth open. Because inherently, we want to know like they're in awe or they're going to say something like, go look. It's like how many Mr. Beast
I got
videos are
one
like,
for you.
yeah, exactly. There you go. That's gonna go viral now. I'll give you my address to send the royalties.
It's so funny,
Anyway,
yeah.
yeah.
It's a whole psychology behind it. And how much of that plays into what you do? I mean, I think marketing in general, you touched on it a little already, but like so much of it is understanding the human brain and like what we're attracted to, what makes us click, what makes us, follow, all those things. Like how much of that plays into what you do?
I think that we just have to be cognizant of our own human behaviors.
Sure.
Like we put out things all the time, and I don't even think we think about it as how would I react to my own content?
Yes.
Because you see these captions, you see people spending what I would assume to be a decent amount of money on a photographer to do these beautiful photo shoots. whether it's a music creator, a model, or whatever. And then you read the caption and it's just like, that is like a beautiful image on a billboard with like a, like salt. Like that doesn't make any sense. You're showing like a beautiful car, salt. Like, does that mean something?
Speak to me.
So like, right. We have to be able to connect, and we don't know people on the internet, right? The majority of our followers are complete strangers, and it's up to us to build an experience around it, build a brand and a perceived persona in a way that get them to feel like they know us. And it's not manipulation or persuasion really in that regard. It's like, if I saw you and you're like a top level Olympic athlete, right? Maybe like a LeBron James, you're LeBron James. Either I just know you for basketball, or I also know you for your Nike commercials. I also know you for being a good dad. I also know you for your philanthropic and charitable foundations and stuff. And like, the only way I know about that is if you put it out into the world or people report on it, obviously, which would be a different level. Yeah. But we have to put out the behind the scenes stuff, because just like somebody that you go to school with, there's a difference between passing someone in a hallway and going to a party with them, or knowing them on a deep level, or maybe they open up to you eventually and tell you about an insecurity that you never in a million years would have thought. But now you feel like you have a bond with that person. You feel like you're on a whole deeper level. That's why I'm pretty much an open book online. I'll show old embarrassing photos of myself. I'll tell people what I'm self-conscious about. I love your old photos
in your parents' basement. I love the throwbacks.
Man, it's me. You know what I mean? So like, yeah. I firmly believe that our origin story content is so massively important, because I watch a lot of documentaries on Netflix and Amazon, Hulu, you name it.
Millions of people documentary. Do.
Yeah, nobody watches documentaries with no foundational origin story content. It doesn't exist, because if they were just telling people, right, it's showing the underdog story. It's showing where you came from. It's showing the obstacles that you've been through, and whether that provides entertainment, whether that provides inspiration, whether that provides education. It needs to give them value, and in all three ways, you're providing your audience with that value. So, I think so many people want to have this polished, like everything polished. We need to connect. How would you present this to your brother? How would you present this to your loved one? How would you present this to somebody that you really wanted to impact that day? Not just, oh, the visuals are beautiful, and all your posts say tag three friends, and use like. Yeah. You need to engage, because a conversation needs to go both ways. Otherwise, you're just talking to people, not talking with people.
Or like, and I think people could get a little bit better. I mean, I wish I could shut this off sometimes, but my brain is constantly reverse engineering how things, whether it's a track, okay, like how is this a mix? What instruments are they using? Like reverse engineering that way. But then also like anytime I click like on a video on Instagram, or if I follow an account, like I'm really trying to reverse engineer. Why did I like this photo or this video, but not any of the 10 others that I just scrolled past? Why did I follow this account when I didn't follow like half the other accounts I just looked at? You know, I think people could get real better about themselves as a consumer, reverse engineering what caused them to do the behavior that they want people to do to them, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I think that we need to... It's such a like a parallel universe, because online as a business owner, as a entrepreneur, as a business-minded music creator, I'll put it that way. We are a brand. We are building billboards with our content. We are working on sales copy and marketing copy. How can I get them to click and engage? And how can I get them to go to my bio and, you know, stay on my videos longer and share it and get those super likes and all that stuff? But we need to disconnect and become consumers as well. Because if we're not consuming other people's content, then we're out of the loop with how it's all interacting with one another in the ecosystem of it. And so putting out content is only one part of the equation, but really connecting is where the research happens. And how do you research? Well, you use the platforms. So that's one reason that I think like scheduling content is a game changer for a lot of people, because then instead of spending 30 minutes or 45 minutes on Instagram, for example, or Twitter, trying to figure out the perfect caption, they can do it on a day where they're not working. They can sit around, kind of come back and forth at their computer. Okay, on Wednesday, I think I'm going to post this image. Drag it in. I'm going to post it at 3 o'clock based on my insights. And it's me in a car, so I'm going to have a caption about how I was driving through, you know, Tulsa, Oklahoma with my sister heading towards graduation or something, right? And then getting people to engage that way through telling a story or asking a question or whatever it might be. But then when you have everything scheduled, then when you're on social media, you can be more social rather than providing. You know what I mean? You can actually eat your own food rather than spending all your time in the kitchen.
When you try to wear all the hats at once, it becomes so exhausting. So like for folks, like for most independent artists, you are the artist. So you're the songwriter, you're the producer, you're the mix engineer, you're the mastering engineer. Then you all of a sudden have to be the PR team, the marketing agency, the label, essentially. If you try to do all those in one sitting, you're going to drive yourself crazy and you're going to burn out and it's just not going to last. So how can you divide your time in a better way so that, you know, on Monday, I'm going to wear my producer hat and maybe on Fridays when I'm putting on my marketing PR hat and like going forward with that. And the quality of what you do will go better if you focus it that way too. Exactly what you said. I want to grab this real quick question that I lost again when I scrolled. Red Syrup Music asks, what advice would you give to people who just started music production? How should I get my music out? I posted on Insta and the interaction is all right, but it's very one-sided. How can I grow that?
I'm assuming he's a music producer?
Yeah. New to music production, it would seem.
New to music production. Okay. So first and foremost, when you're new to making music, definitely spend a little bit more time on getting good at your craft. Nothing worse than somebody who has been making beats for 3 weeks and is pushing on social media like they're Timbaland or something.
Look how fire I am. Yes, yes, exactly.
I get it. Yeah.
You can't like fool ego, folks.
You can't. And so what you need to do is really make sure through creative criticism, maybe you're part of a few groups or you have some friends that are just very honest with you, get their feedback, learn, watch a lot of tutorials. You know, you don't need the best gear in the world. Use what you have till what you have pays for what you want. But definitely, you know, try to become the best at what you're doing as quickly as possible. So focus a little bit more time at first on the craft. And then from there, what you want to do is you want to mix in not only your production, but your why people should care and your personality. So you could do an occasional visualizer video. Maybe you're selling a beat online. And then you show your studio, even if it's just a little keyboard on your mom's kitchen table next to a old beat up laptop. That's part of your origin story. People are going to find that endearing. Don't think you have to have a multi-million dollar studio or like this crap. You don't need to have it, right? This is only for me to feel inspired in my own space. What you need to do then is you need to start reaching out to artists and other producers to figure out the lingo, figure out the conversations that are happening in the community. Nothing is better than when other producers and artists know you by name, even if you're not in the mix of what they're doing with business. And that's not like a clout thing. That's a reputation. And that reputation can get to the right people. Next thing you know, the artist who bought beats from you 3 years ago is now telling two of their friends who are making music, oh, yo, go to Adam Ivy. Like, he has beats. I don't know if he's selling them online, but like, I'll give you his contact information, send him an email. And so what you need to do is you need to get out there. Don't get greedy with trying to sell everything. Try to work with people first because that builds your portfolio. And trust me, I'm on team no free beats as much as the next guy, but I do feel like that's also holding a lot of people back because there's opportunities out there for other artists. Because if you're just new to making music, making beats and instrumentals, there's other people that are new to recording. There's other people that are new to the mix. So if you partner with people that are maybe one step up from where you are, they're early on, but they're looking for people to partner with. A person with 30 followers working with somebody else with 70 followers is a huge win. And I think that a lot of times we look and see, you know, I want to be working with a guy with a blue check mark. I want to be working with a guy that has a single out there, did a, you know, hot mixtape with Nicki Minaj or like whoever, right? And we can't think about it this way. You go to the gym, you start working out, you get on the bench and maybe you can do the bar. You can do the bar the next few days. You're super sore. You're doing the bar. Maybe a few days later, you can do tens on both sides and you're building that strength. You can't go from doing the bar to doing 305 pounds the next day. It doesn't work. Like, you're going to hurt yourself. So the same goes for trying to jump too fast with the asks, because if you jump into people's DMs, if you're pushing your stuff like it's the hottest thing since, David Foster, you're gonna get kicked down pretty quickly and you're going to ruin your reputation in a lot of circles because it's hard to buy that back. So be humble, work on your musical craft, get the feedback, start putting it out into the world and go to people with less attitude. I'm not saying you have attitude, but go to people with an open mind and just a curious spirit. Just say like, hey, yeah, I'm relatively new to this. I would love for you to not only give me feedback, but if you ever want to work together, here's 5 beats. Here's a link. I'd love to like, just, I will give you whatever you want. I would just love to hear your voice on my beats. I'm totally trying to build a name for myself, and you build a portfolio that way. No different than a photographer who does a bunch of free photo shoots or very inexpensive photo shoots as they hone their craft, because you are practicing with these individuals. So they are giving you value. Even if they're not paying you money to use your beats, they are giving you value, not only in the communication skills that you're developing, but also the back and forth with, you know, maybe leasing contracts. Maybe they're sending you stems and giving you permission to try to mix their vocals, and you're going back and forth.
Yep.
They're trusting you, you're trusting them. That's very valuable in itself. Don't stress about the monetization up front. You kind of need to earn your dues when it comes to that. I didn't make any money with my music for like 3 years. So mm-hmm. I'm not sympathetic on people that have been doing it 6 months and are frustrated that they've never made any money.
Yes, I think that people, it goes to the persistence and the consistency that you talked about earlier. It's like, you got to just stick with it. You can't do it for 6 months and say, well, nothing's happening. Like, you haven't done it long enough. It's a marathon, not a sprint. Keep going, keep going, going. And about what you said about being humble about where you are. Like, if you just started 3 months ago, don't come out and try to act like you're Timbaland. Like, we can aspire to be that for sure. But if you come out trying to act like you are that right now, people can tell right away that you're not. So just share where you're at in this moment in time and be humble and be authentic. And people are more attracted to that than if you try to put on a front of something that you're not. Real quick, I'll read some kind words about us, and then we have one final question that is, I think, a good way to sum things up. So Mendani says, just wanted to say, I love both of your channels and I appreciate your content. If it wasn't for you guys, I wouldn't have gotten back into music. Keep doing what you're doing. Thank you. I think that's the most motivating thing for me. And I think everybody has the opportunity to inspire people like that. I don't know how you feel, but I just feel like that. Better than the views on a video, better than the, you know, whatever, the checks at the end of the month, like that is, makes me feel good, I guess.
You can't, I'll touch on this real quick. You can't be an educator on YouTube that is motivated by the money, because as an educator, if you're a very good educator, you will constantly have churn on your channel. I have 210,000 followers on my channel, and I understand that if I do a very good job and answer people's questions, they don't need me anymore. There's always going to be a group of people. If I help them, I have to be above the needing them to come back. I need to be able to send them on their way and trust that I've helped them to where they will come back. They'll be loyal. That's why they don't unsubscribe. But hearing something like that, that people are getting value, is very fulfilling. That's why I do what I do.
Yeah, for sure. And people should kind of start, I think, a lot of folks talk about money, 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 but if you can rebuild that North Star to be like helping people, inspiring people, whatever, it's just a way to get happier, because no amount of money in the world, you know, money can't buy happiness, whatever. Money can solve some problems, but there's nothing, no matter my income, that makes me happier than hearing people say that stuff. So I think people should just refocus that North Star.
Have you ever bought a jet ski? I think that would probably make us more happy than that comment, but I don't have a jet ski.
I wish I had a jet ski. I feel like everybody has a jet ski. We need to get a jet ski.
Let's get a jet ski sponsorship. Let's use the power of marketing.
Oh, you're right.
To get sponsored by like Sea-Doo or something.
And I'll come to your place. If you're watching this, and we'll ride them. Yeah.
That's right. No. Yeah. You come out to Florida. I have a lake in my backyard. We'll put them out there.
Jet ski. And then we'll make content out of it. So on top of the brand deal, it's perfect.
And then we can get a GoPro sponsorship and a drone sponsorship.
Have your people call my people.
Yeah. Hashtag marketing.
Yes. No, all right.
I appreciate that.
Final question, because we're going kind of long and I don't want to take up too much of your time, but I think this is a good way to end it. And it kind of ties into what we were saying before. Gosh, did I lose the comment again? Yes. Here it is. Leeks says, I think this is a great way to end. What drove you the most when you made music and didn't have any income? Why didn't you quit?
That's a damn good question. Because I love making music, and I knew that it was possible because I watched other people around me doing it. So just because I wasn't there yet didn't mean I wouldn't be there. And I knew that my work ethic and my motivation and drive were only three things that people couldn't take from me. Right? They could take a vehicle away. They could say no a bunch of times, but the vision to prove them wrong, the vision to take what I had up here, put it out into some musical, you know, files, and then be able to provide that to artists or to commercials or sync licensing or whatever. It's absolutely possible, right? I mean, the difference between a lot of people succeeding and a lot of people failing isn't their skill set. It's their persistence. It's how much intestinal fortitude do they have before they give up? Because that's how I built my YouTube channel. There's a bunch of other people giving like marketing advice here and there. I don't care because they're not going to last. They're not going to outlast me. Right. I've been doing this a long time.
It's in your blood.
I grew up very poor. So like, I don't want to go back to that. And so that's what drives me moving forward. I remember what it was like to eat eggs, ramen noodles, eggs, ramen noodles, and tuna. And maybe some Kraft singles, some generic Kraft singles on occasion. When I was dead broke, you know, when early stages of doing music full time, you know, I was lucky if I was making 1500, 2 grand, maybe 3 grand a month. And, you know, here we are all these years later and I'm not complaining, but, I think that people go after music for money and that's when they fail because they go after it as a career. When you go after music for the creative and the fulfillment in it, then there comes a point where you can take the leap into doing it full time because you know you're capable. You've seen hints and clues in your life that you can make money off of it. And then All it is scaling. No different than, like I said earlier, I could go take a lawnmower and go around my block and find somebody that's willing to pay me to mow their lawn. It might be $20, it might be $5, it might be $50. Somebody would let me mow their lawn. That's all it takes. Is one yes, one person showing you it's possible to make money off what you want to do. And then from there, either it grows or you get discouraged. Those of us who it grows, we're excited over $13 here. We're excited over $100 beat lease when we're first getting started. We'll say yes to some graphic design jobs, even though we're a music producer, because we know that that person's affiliated with a nightclub and that could lead to some music opportunities. So it's like, stay in your lane, open-minded to opportunities outside of it that aren't going to take you away from it. It can be very discouraging, but if you love making music, let the music kind of guide you and keep you happy until the money comes. But if you're out there, you have a decent job, or you want to quit high school to do music full time, don't do it. Don't be an idiot. There's plenty of people that have success stories of like, oh, I was, raised without any parents and, I started making music when I was 12 and I didn't graduate the eighth grade. That's one person. I can name more people that have won the Olympic 100-meter dash than that one person that happened to be in the right place at the right time and all that stuff. So, just go after what makes you happy. Go after what brings you passion or what you're passionate about brings you fulfillment and something that you could sustain. If you're just doing it for the money, you're going to burn out no matter what you're doing.
That's perfect. Perfect way to end it, Adam. Thank you for that. I want to say to folks in the chat, thank you all for watching. I know a lot of you are taking value. Y'all are saying very nice things in the chat, so I appreciate that. This video will, of course, be up later, both on my channel and the 343 Labs channel for you to consume and watch and play over and over and over again until it's all burned into your brain and you can't stop dreaming about me and Adam on jet skis eating hot dogs. So make sure you are subscribed to not only my channel, but to the 343 Labs channel, youtube.com/343labs, and Adam's channel, who's I've linked it in the description. So make sure you go to his channel. Beyond this conversation that we just had, Adam is having great conversations with other artists and other folks talking about their experiences, marketing, music, branding, all that good stuff. He's got lots of very, very useful tactical content that y'all should check out as required reading post this interview for sure. Don't forget to check out 343labs.com if you are looking to level up those music production skills, mixing, mastering, synthesis, music theory. And then for free, absolutely free, you can tune in every single day on youtube.com/343labs to learn those things with Ableton certified trainers and established music production teachers and instructors. So make sure you tune in and subscribe over there to watch. Adam, you've got a couple things to shout out probably, I assume. What should people go to? I've got the YouTube link in the description, but what else should people think about?
Sure. First and foremost, just come connect with me on Instagram. From there, we can figure out, how we're going to rock moving forward. But Instagram, or it's at Adam Ivy. Mm-hmm. Everywhere, it's pretty much Adam Ivy. YouTube.com/Adam Ivy. If you want to work with me directly on marketing stuff, If you're very early on and beginner, like just watch my YouTube content. You don't have to come to me directly for any of that. But if you are frustrated, if you are kind of at an intermediate position, you've been doing music, releasing content, and you just need help kind of getting past the plateau or a glass ceiling that you're experiencing, I work with a select group of people in my mentorship program over at adamivymentorship.com. You fill out an application. We see if you're a good fit and see if you even need my help, right?
Awesome.
Besides that, yeah, just Instagram. That's the easiest place to find me. I try to answer all the DMs. So if you have questions or just want to say hello, I'd love to see you over there.
Fantastic. And the light went out. My Vibe red light went out. So that means this interview must be over, Adam. But thank you. This was great. Such a great interview.
I appreciate the opportunity, man. It was a lot of fun.
All right, what did you learn from that talk? That's what I want to know. Tweet at me at Nick Tatro if you found some valuable nugget of information in there. Adam is full with, you know, loads of information about getting your music out there, practical marketing tips for the modern musician. I just think it's so crazy. It's a lot of stuff that I put an effort into, but to hear him really break it down as a true strategist and brand guru almost, it's really great to hear. So I hope you enjoyed this interview. If you did, please subscribe to the Tatro Radio podcast and leave a rating. Better yet, the best thing you can do is tell a friend, tell a fellow home studio music producer or just music producer in general about this show, recommend it to them, hit the little share button in your podcast app and send it their way in a text or whatever. Getting the word out about the show is really important. And if you can help me out with that, I would really appreciate it. But anyway, thank you all so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe to the channel so you can watch these interviews live at youtube.com/Tatro. And that's going to be it for today. Thank you so much for listening to Tatro Radio. My name is Tatro. Have a good one.